Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Small business owner, you are special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes. Welcome back, heroes. It's 13 After. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and our phone number, toll-free coast-to-coast on this show, is 1-888-822-8255. Roger Volcola is back with us. He's our friend and has been with us many times before. He's the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. He's also an associate professor of management at American University in Washington, D.C., and a private consultant to business and government. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be back.
Well, I'm enjoying your book more and more. There's some neat stuff in here that I have not seen before and anywhere else, and that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But we've been talking now for several weeks about how to be a better negotiator, and as I mentioned earlier in the first segment, Roger, before you got here, that one of the good ways to become a better negotiator is to be aware of the people you're negotiating with and to be able to identify the what kind of a negotiator they are, whether they're a good negotiator, whether they're not a good negotiator, whether they're a tough negotiator, and what are some of the things that motivate them. We've talked about a lot of those things, but one of the things we have not talked about yet, which is a major section in your book, which I think is excellent that it's in here, is the issue of culture. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about what motivates people, a lot of times without them realizing it, without us realizing it about ourselves, our cultures contribute to our motivations, don't they?
They do, and it's become more and more of an issue in businesses. Not only because we've become more global in our business and negotiating with countries around the world, but because the workforce is much more diverse. So you don't have to leave the United States.
Yeah.
To be faced with cultural issues.
Could be right in your own little hometown.
Exactly.
Small town America.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that that you could be negotiating via email. I mean, we've had lots of people on this show, Roger, who started businesses, who started talking about the idea of a business with people from another country, and they were 2 or 3 years into developing and actually founding and operating that business, and they'd never met each other.
That's amazing.
And so they've been doing negotiating. A lot of it had been over the email, some of it over phone, a lot of different ways. And so, you know, we live in a time when a very, very small company could be dealing with another very small company in another part of the world,
right?
More so than ever before.
And email negotiations, Jim, can be difficult negotiations because all that nonverbal communication that you get with the face-to-face, which can communicate so much, is not there.
Right. Even vocal inflections can be on a telephone that you don't get in an email.
So there can easily be misunderstandings.
Now that's, of course, that's unless they type in a little smiley face.
Right.
I hate those.
There's a whole lexicon, I think, of these different
things. There is. You know, I don't know how to do any of them. I've never, I promise you folks, I've never sent one smiley face. Go ahead. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, one of the ways in which many of us in the United States are approach negotiating differently than folks in other parts of the world has to do with the pace of the negotiation. I think Americans have a reputation for wanting to get down to business very quickly. And there are many other regions of the world for which relationships, developing a sense of who the other person is, what they stand for, knowledge about their company, and so forth, is really a critical part of the negotiation. Because in many other areas of the world, in the Middle East, in many Latin countries, it's the relationship that really matters, that sort of binds things. And it's not necessarily that piece of paper that we call a contract. And so in many areas of the country, they'll spend a lot of time up front getting to know one another.
And let's define lot. And the reason I want to do that is because I have conducted business and attempted to conduct business in other parts of the world, and I learned early on that I might have to get to know these people for years mm-hmm. before they actually gave me any of their business.
Yeah.
Now, once they got to know you and they were comfortable with you, you could almost couldn't run them off. I mean
exactly.
you were locked in, but you really had to pay the price early on.
Yes. Now there are some shortcuts to that. In the United States, for example, we are perhaps a little more accustomed to cold calling than some other areas of the world. But there are areas of the world where it's who you know that's important, and you need an introduction. You don't just pick up the phone and
right.
try to introduce yourself and get a business deal. You try to find somebody that knows somebody at a particular level in this organization to introduce you.
And that actually, introducing people from other parts of the world to people in their country is actually a discipline. I mean, there are people who make their living doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think business cards are important that way, and a lot of time is spent kind of getting a sense of who the other party is and developing a relationship.
There was a time when I was doing business in the Middle East, and I traveled over there as well, and I had a business card that was printed in English on one side and Arabic on the
yes.
other.
Yes, and that's something that folks from other countries really appreciate, because it suggests that you've taken the time to learn something about the language and the culture and so forth. You respect it, you admire it,
and you're interested in it. And you know what else? You're interested in it.
Yes.
And I may have missed if you just said that. I didn't mean to.
I think we said it at the same time.
Okay, I apologize for that. But the thing is showing some interest in, and it needs to be genuine. It obviously, you know, the fake interest comes across real quick, by the way. They're very smart folks all over the world, and they can tell if you're sincere or not. But if you can develop a genuine interest in small things about their culture, their religion, their family, those kinds of things go a long way toward helping you negotiate a better deal with these people.
And they will encourage that, because they want you to know about their family and their business and
right.
their culture and so forth.
We're somewhat like that in America, but we don't really expect that as a... That's not required to do business with people.
Right.
That's not the kind of thing... But it's almost like it's a little bit of a test in other parts of the world sometimes, especially, for example, in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
They really want you to be interested in what they in their world. Stand by, Roger. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, we're visiting with Roger Volkema. The book is called The Negotiation Toolkit. We're going to take a quick break. It's 20 after 888-822-8255. Don't go away. Sweet Baby James. We all need friends. And I'm glad you're here, my friends, small business owners, small business dreamers. We're visiting with Roger Volkema. He's the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. We're talking about how to become a better negotiator, how to make sure that you gradually, slowly but surely, if that's what it takes, become a better negotiator and a more effective negotiator, and to be able to get the most for the time that you're spending negotiating. And we've been talking about over the last several weeks about a lot of different ways to identify when you are in a negotiation. We've been talking about the fact that sometimes it's not just sitting down at a closing table, is it, David? I mean, is it, Roger, where you're sitting across the table from someone and it's official, this is a negotiating time. You know, sometimes it's a lot of different venues and scenarios. You said something a minute ago, Roger, about people in other parts of the world thinking that Americans basically just get down to business and how we're different from them. But I wanted to go back for a minute and talk about how things are different in the United States.
Yeah.
The North has a different negotiating pace from the South.
Yes, I think that's true.
The West has a different negotiating pace from both of them. And the East and the Northeast and the North, when I say the North, I'm talking about Midwest. Midwest, the Northeast, and the East are sort of similar, in my opinion. I've worked all over this country for a long time, and I consider their negotiating styles to be very similar. And I consider the South to be quite a bit different, and the West to be different still. And the reason I say that is if you call someone from the South, and it's someone that you, maybe you don't even know them all that well, you you can talk to them for a few minutes, you know, 3 to 5 minutes or so, about football or the weather or something. You can get to know them a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if you call people from the East, the Northeast, and the Midwest, even if you know them pretty well, maybe they'll talk to you about something, but a lot of times they'll say, hey, Jim, what's on your mind? They get right down to business real quick. Right. Have you noticed that?
I think that's generally true, and it's a really good point, Jim, because we try to talk about cultures and countries in the same breath, but there's really subcultures within countries, and the United mm-hmm. States being such a heterogeneous country does have subcultures. And I think in terms of relationship building, it probably is more important in the South than it is in the North.
Yeah.
And I think the pace of relationships is probably different in the North than the South. It's much faster and tend to get down to business.
And that's not to say that anybody in any particular region cares less about their friends or the people they do business with. It's just the pace.
Exactly.
I think that's the word.
Right.
And we're influenced by the pace that's around us. And whenever I call people in these different parts of the country, which I've been doing for a long time, what I do is I'm prepared to go at their pace.
Mm-hmm.
Because I may call somebody from Connecticut thinking they're going to say, hey, Jim, what you got on your mind? And they may say, you know, what about the Mets? Or, you know, they may want to talk about something. Mm-hmm. So I'm prepared to go at their pace.
Yes, I think that's good advice. There are a couple of terms, Jim, to describe this notion of time and how it has a role in negotiating. There are cultures that are on what are called polychronic time, poly meaning many, many mm-hmm. times, and others that are on monochronic time. Generally, in the United States, we think of people being on monochronic time. Time is viewed as a commodity,
yeah.
It's money. We do one thing at a time. If we have a meeting from 3 to 4, we hold the meeting from 3 to 4, whether it's completed at 4 o'clock or not. But a lot of cultures are on what's called polychronic time, which means that many things may be going on at the same time. And time is seen as more elastic,
mm-hmm.
and it's relational. So if I have a meeting at 3 o'clock, it may not start till 3:30 or 4. If it was supposed to go an hour, but business isn't done, okay, we just keep meeting.
Yeah.
It's about the relationship. It's not about the time.
That's exactly right. Those other cultures are not a slave to the clock like we are.
Exactly. And I think the South is probably a little more elastic and relation-based in their use of orientation to time than the North.
But see, I really think that Americans are more monochronic. Did I say that word?
Monochronic, yes.
I think they're more really, we're more the same than not. I've got some things I want to ask you about when we come back
okay.
after these messages. 29 after the hour, folks, we're talking about cultural issues in negotiating. I'll be right back with our good friend, Roger Volkema. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, 888-822-8255. We're back. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Our phone number is 888-822-8255 if you have a question or a comment, if you'd like to weigh in on our discussion, if you'd like to agree or disagree with us, 888-822-8255. And the other one in this US is Roger Volkema. He's the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. Roger, tell us where your book's available.
Jim, it's available at most bookstores. It's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Yeah, I think if you purchase it on one of the websites, maybe at the bookstores also, there's a 20% discount right now because it's
okay.
one of these books that's just on the market.
Folks, this is an outstanding book. As you know, I don't bring authors and their books on the show if I don't feel that they're worthy of your time and your money. I call a lot of books that are sent to my office, and only the ones that I think are worthy get on. But I definitely recommend this book. In fact, I think it's the only negotiation book that I have recommended. So it's one of a kind in that genre. We're talking about something that's really a very interesting concept to me, and that's the concept of culture, how culture pervades the negotiation process. And, you know, we were talking a minute ago about the way we are in the United States, that the different regions in the United States are different, and you were talking about being monochronic and polychronic, and those are two words that I don't think I've ever said those words out loud before, but America is monochronic, as you say. We're basically tied and a slave to the clock, but you know what? We're also a slave to the calendar in America,
mm-hmm.
because I mean, most Americans know where they're going to be a month from now or a day after tomorrow, whatever. And a lot of the rest of the world doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. And even if they write it down, they're not concerned about it.
Exactly. They're much more flexible about it.
Yeah. And if you don't know that going in, you will become very frustrated dealing with other parts of the world. And Roger, it's not that they're wrong. It's just that they're different.
It's just that they're different. Yeah.
And so if you don't know that, one of the best examples of that, and I'll share it with you again, Roger, is my friend who went to Brazil and was having work done on his house where he'd moved, and the workers kept saying that the work was going to be done mañana, and after several days of it not being done the next day, he asked the foreman, he said, "You said mañana yesterday and the day before. When's it going to be done?" He said, "Mañana." And the guy said, "So that means tomorrow." He said, "No, mañana doesn't mean tomorrow. Mañana means not today." And so he didn't understand the cultural issues here, and he was very frustrated, and it caused him not to be able to negotiate very well with this guy.
One of the things, Jim, to keep in mind about time is that there are a number of cultures in the Middle East, Latin America, in Japan, for example, where the negotiations go at a much slower pace, and things may not get started, say, in the Middle East, when you think they were scheduled to be started. But when it comes to meeting with representatives from a Middle Eastern culture regarding a negotiation, you still need to be on time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they view time in a more flexible or elastic way doesn't mean you don't show up on time, because
right.
It's a matter of respect for...
That, now, that's in the East. That's in the Pacific
mm-hmm.
Rim, right?
In the Pacific Rim,
yeah.
I think it's probably true in Latin America, for example,
uh-huh.
that there's a certain respect that comes from showing up on time,
right?
Even though the meeting may not necessarily start when you have it written down in your calendar.
Now, if you are in the Middle East, you may be expected to show up on time, but if you're in their country, they probably won't be on time.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, right? You're still expected to show up on time,
mm-hmm.
even though you have a pretty good sense that
yeah.
it's not going to start when it was
right.
Discussed.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing related to this is the business of space. You know, in the United States, we tend to maintain these zones in all forms of conversation, but in other areas of the world, there's much more people are much more proximate to each other when they're talking. There's more touching that goes on. There's
mm-hmm.
kissing on the cheeks and so forth.
Yeah.
And it can get very complicated. In some Latin countries, you kiss on two cheeks. In some cultures, you kiss on one cheek. And I've gotten caught sort of midair not knowing if there was another one coming or what.
Well, you know... That's a very interesting thing. When I was working in the Middle East, if I got to know someone over there, that's what would happen. I mean, it didn't depend on how many times I had met this person. It depended on how well we had gotten along.
Yes.
If this person really felt like he you know liked me or we connected, he would actually say that, you know, at the end of the first meeting, let's say. Well, the next time when I would shake his hand, I would actually allow him to pull me toward him if he wanted to. And once I felt that pull, then I would lean forward and we would kiss each other on both cheeks. And sometimes, now this is interesting, folks, and this may be grossing some people out there, but it's very appropriate, and it did not make me uncomfortable at all. Sometimes you would kiss twice on the same cheek. Have you ever seen that before? In the Middle East, they do that,
mm-hmm.
and it's a double peck, so to speak. And there's nothing untoward about it. It's just very, very appropriate. And once you get into it, and you're in that culture, it's really kind of a warming effect, because it makes you feel close to this person.
Yeah, it's funny, Jim, to watch somebody from the United States who's not comfortable with the space thing.
Yes.
With somebody else who is. That's witness these sorts of things where somebody from another culture who tends to talk in your face is trying to close the gap, and the person from the United States is trying to back off.
Yeah. Yeah.
like a dance.
The whole key, Roger, is to be aware of what may be about to happen, isn't it?
Exactly.
You've got to keep your mind open so you can be ready for these things. That's the key, so you can adjust when necessary. Go take a quick break. We'll be right back with Roger Volkema. We are back. It's 44 After. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. And Roger Volkema is our guest, and he is our negotiation expert. He's helping us to become better negotiators so we can get more out of the time we spend negotiating with people to do business. Roger, you know, a minute ago I was talking about getting to know people, gentlemen in the Middle East that I would be talking to about doing business and the kissing on the cheek and all that. There are men that I know that if I told them, now, when we go to the Middle East, you're going to have to kiss somebody, some guy, they wouldn't go. And you know, because that's sometimes you know, our homophobia kicks in, but the truth is that when that happens, that means that you're making progress in your negotiation.
Right. It's not a sexual thing.
And they don't do that with everyone.
Right. It's a sign of trust.
That's right.
We've developed a relationship.
Exactly right. They pulled you into their circle, so to speak.
Right.
And I'll tell you something else. And I'm sure it's this way in a lot of other countries as well. If you are ever invited to their home, that is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
That's a major deal.
I think part of the relationship building, Jim, involves often giving small gifts and showing people the culture and so forth. And we do some of that here in the United States, but perhaps not as much as it's done in other parts of the world.
Yeah, when you travel, especially if you travel to other parts of the world, you need to check with whoever you can over there so that you know whether you're expected to bring gifts, because some places you're actually expected to bring gifts.
Right. You know, one of the things we talked about a few shows ago is that the most important element in negotiation is information. And in this case, it's true as well. Not information necessarily about the other party's negotiating position, but information about their culture, their customs and expectations. And so the better sense you have of that and what might happen, it might not because they may be the exception to the cultural rule.
Right.
But the better sense you have of what might happen, the more comfortable you're going to be when it does. You're going to seem like a good potential business partner.
What about agreements? Let's talk about agreements across culture.
Well, this kind of goes back to the notion of relationships. In some cultures, developing a relationship is critical because it's the relationship that binds us and not this piece of paper. So it may simply be a handshake or something of that sort that seals a negotiation. In the United States, of course, we are a very litigious society, and the courts are very strong. And so we tend to use a contract as the way of binding us. But in other cultures, it's often the relationship that's built. And in some cultures, they're very careful to negotiate with somebody who's in charge, somebody who's at the CEO or the president of the organization, because they know that if there's a problem later on, and they developed a relationship with this person, they can go back to them and say, hey, Juan, you know, we seem to have some problem with the delivery date here, and I thought we agreed that it would be such and such. And they know that this person then, because of the relationship that was built, will take care of them. And they know because of the position they hold in the organization that they can do it.
Right.
You know, in the United States, we tend to delegate lots of decisions to middle levels, but those people don't always have the authority to make changes or adjustments.
Right. What about peer-to-peer? Is it if you're meeting with the president, is it important for our president to meet with that president?
I think in a lot of cultures they expect that.
Mm-hmm.
I was the president of a nonprofit organization here in Washington, D.C., and we were paired up with Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. And I, even though we had vice presidents and other committee officers, I discovered that the people in Brasilia always wanted to do business with me. They always wanted to talk with me rather than the vice president or the committee chairs. And again, I think it's because Latin America tends to be fairly hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that if I say it's true and we have a relationship, then I'm going to make good on it. And that I can make good on it because I'm the president of the organization.
What about the machismo thing?
Well, there's a certain amount of that. There's
chauvinist thing.
Some cultures where pride and honor are very, very important, either because of this sort of machismo that we hear about in Latin America, or in a culture like the Japanese culture, where face and honor are really important. And so in Japan, people are not likely to tell you no to your face, because it brings dishonor to them and you. And it makes people uncomfortable, and harmony and honor are critical.
It's that way in the Middle East as well.
Yes, it is.
People in the Middle East will rarely say no. They'll rarely review your proposal and call you back or receive your call and say, you know, I've just decided that I'm not going to do this.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine once said that in some areas of the world, like the Middle East or in Japan, they can say yes, but it can mean no or maybe or I'm thinking about it or lots of different things. In other areas of the world, in Brazil, for example, if people say no, 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 and generally it means yes.
Right.
It's just a way of saying, tell me how important this is to you. Our relationship depends on this. You're getting this. Okay.
Right.
So no doesn't necessarily mean no, and yes doesn't necessarily mean yes.
Right. And you have to be aware of all that. And these are important things. And as we grow our businesses, as the Internet becomes more and more a part of our lives, as our customers could get to where they could come from anywhere in the globe, we've got to be aware of all these different things, don't we?
We're also often focused on price of an item.
Mm-hmm.
And many times in a culture, they use a different approach to negotiating. They may start with a very exaggerated initial offer, knowing that they're going to make lots of concessions.
Yeah.
Whereas in some other cultures, they may say, all right, this is what I think is fair, and not expect as many concessions.
I've heard the story of where the American didn't know what they were doing, and someone gave the guy gave them the price, and they took it, and the guy says, "No, I'm not going to sell you for that. Negotiate with me. Haggle.
What do you know about that?
Stand by, Roger. We'll be right back, folks. It's 50 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. All right, we are on a negotiating magic carpet ride with Roger Volkema. The author of The Negotiation Toolkit. The book is available in bookstores. It's available online. Lots of places, right, Roger?
Yes, it is.
And you said that it's kind of picked up a bullet lately. Sales, it's, at least from the standpoint of your Amazon ratings, it's taken off.
Yeah, I think it has.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The Negotiation Toolkit, folks. This is a book. It's out saying, heck, I think it's worth the price just for this cultural section that we've been talking about. Okay, Roger, we'd gotten into some of the specifics in these cultural issues with regard to contracts and agreements and what people expect.
Yeah, we're talking a little bit about the party you're negotiating with and what power they have to close a deal. In the United States, we tend to decentralize decision-making and give folks at the middle and lower levels lots of authority to do that. But in other cultures, that's not always the case. In Latin America, in the Middle East, for example, the decisions generally rest with the person at the top. And so you need to make sure you're talking with such an individual. And then don't be surprised that if they're negotiating with you, they expect also to talk with somebody at the top.
Yeah. Well, if you are a vice president and you're dealing with a vice president, you may not be able to expect to talk to the president. And therefore, the president, if we know that the president is the one making the decision, then that's information you need to realize. Because
mm-hmm.
you may just be spinning your wheels.
Now, in a country like Japan, Jim, it can be even more complicated because they're a very collective society, and they tend to make their decisions by consensus. So there's a process called Ringi, whereby they
Ringi.
Like to...
Say that again.
Ringi, I think it's pronounced R-I-N-G-I.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a consensus decision-making process whereby they like to kind of run the decision by a lot of people before they go ahead with something.
Right.
So it's not like one individual can say yay or nay, and that's the end of it.
I want to go back for just a minute and back to my question about machismo and chauvinism. Are women able to make more inroads in these paternalistic societies and cultures now than they used to be?
Well, I'm sure it's changed. I'm sure there are more opportunities for women than ever before, but there are still some barriers, I think, in some cultures. Some cultures in the Middle East, the women play no role whatsoever in these kinds of processes. And in fact, bringing along a team of people that includes a woman may actually work to your disadvantage in some. They may refuse to negotiate with you, possibly. So you need to be aware of this. This is, again, where information, not just about negotiating position, but about the expectations of the culture is important to work out.
I know of a case where a woman was involved. She was brought along. and they met with everyone, and they actually conducted some discussions. But until the woman was not there, was anything serious discussed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the people who were with the woman didn't understand this for a long time, so they wasted a lot of time. And it's unfortunate, very unfortunate, obviously. But if they are the customer, there's really not anything you can do about it, is there?
Who's part of your party is important. A friend told me a story about a negotiation he engaged in Vietnam.
We've got 10 seconds.
It was an original meeting, and he brought along a lawyer. They wouldn't do anything with him because he said, well, you brought a lawyer, don't trust us. And so that was the end of the negotiation. So you got to think about those sorts of things. Relationship is important in many cultures, and you can insult people by bringing along a lawyer, an accountant, at an initial meeting.
Absolutely. Roger, we got to wrap it up for this hour. As always, you did a great job.
Yeah,
you're
going
to be back in 2 weeks. We're going to talk some more about negotiating.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks,
Enjoyed
Roger.
It.
See you later. Roger Volkman, ladies and gentlemen. Got to take a... Well, actually, we're going to leave for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.